Kapi janna balaba kiri varadhari Kapi janna balaba kiri varadhari Sarananda na bhaja chanaranjana Yasarananda na bhaja chanaranjana Yamuna chira vanacha Yamuna Chiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Kapi Janna Balaba Giri Varadhari Kapi Janna Balaba Giri Varadhari Sarananda na bhaja janarangana Yasarananda na bhaja janarangana Yamuna Chiravanachari Yamuna Chiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Kapi Janna Balaba Giri Varadhari Kapi Janna Balaba Giri Varadhari Sarananda na bhaja janarangana Ya sarananda na bhaja janarangana Yamuna Chiravanachari Yamuna Chiravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava, Radha Madhava Shri Radhe. Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Radhe, Jaya Shri Radhe. Raja Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Jai. Shri Radha Madhava ki jai. Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Which chapter is it? 11, takes 20, isn't it?
30 and 31.
Oh, 30, yeah, sorry. Okay. 30 and 31, okay. Okay, well, everyone will do the Sanskrit together. Atavishat svabhavanam. What's that? Chasodasha. Atavishat svabhavanam. You gotta speak up a bit, Shesha. Atavishat svabhavanam. Sarvakamamanutamam. Sarvakamanutamam.
Somebody else?
sani cha sodasa. Entered. Sabhavanam. Personal palaces. Sava. All. Kamam. Desires. Anuttamam.
Perfect to the fullest extent.
Prasada. Palaces. Yatra. Where? Padninam. Of the wives numbering, Sahasrani, thousands, Cha, over and above, Sodasha, 16. Translation. Thereafter the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Please repeat. Thereafter the Lord entered his palaces, which were perfect to the fullest extent. His wives lived in them, and they numbered over 16,000. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and for each and every one of them there was a fully equipped palace, complete with necessary compounds and gardens. Full description of these palaces given in the 10th canto. All the palaces were made of the best marble stone. They were illuminated by jewels and decorated by curtains and carpets of velvet and silk, nicely bedecked and embroidered with gold lace. The personality of Godhead means one who is full with all power, all energy, all opulences, all beauties, all knowledge and all renunciation. Therefore, in the palaces of the Lord, there was nothing wanting for fulfilling all desires of the Lord. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited, and the supply is also unlimited. Everything being unlimited, it is concisely described here as Sava Kamam, or full with all desirable equipment. So I'll just say a few things about this. Yeah. So, Krishna built the city of Dwarka because he had been, the story goes back to Kamsa's bereaving wives. Does anyone know the names of Kamsa's widows? Wow, very good. He's a learned Brahmin. So, who was their father?
Jarasandha.
Jarasandha was the father. Okay. So, how many Akshahinas did he bring to Mathura?
17.
No. 17 is also relevant. But he brought 23. 23 Akshahinas to Mathura. So, Krishna, he had a plan. He didn't want to kill Jarasandha. Why not? Why didn't he want to kill Jarasand?
I think because through him, he would kill so many armies.
Yeah, because he wanted Jarasandha to assemble more armies to bring for Krishna to kill, because yada yada hidamasya glani bhavati baraka. So, you know, he wanted to kill the miscreants, so there was lots of miscreants at the time. He needs to come now. Anyway, so he killed, you know, Krishna. His chariots descended from Vaikuntha, two chariots, one for him, one for Balaram. And so they defeated Jarasandha's armies. And so there were rivers of blood. And in the rivers of blood, what did the heads look like?
Tortoise.
Yeah, almost turtles.
Turtles.
Turtles. What did the horses look like in the rivers of blood? Crocodiles. Hands and thighs, what did they look like?
Snakes.
What?
Snakes.
Fish.
Fish.
So Jarasandha was defeated, then Balaram tied him up, but Krishna said, you release him, because, you know, he wanted to bring all these different armies to kill him. And so then Jarasandha was embarrassed, because why was he embarrassed? Anyone know?
Huh?
No, because he hadn't died on the battlefield, because he'd been defeated, but he hadn't died. So then when he was leaving the battlefield, all these other kings, they told him, you know, you'll win next time, bring another army. And so this happened 17 times. So he was not one to accept defeat easily. Pretty. Anyway, so then what happened was that Jarasandha was coming on one side to attack, and somebody else was coming on the other side, another king. Who was that?
Kaliyavana.
So Krishna thought, you know, they're coming on one side, Jarasandha, to Mathura, that's where he was, and on the other side was Kaliyavana. So then he decided, this is too dangerous, I'm going to build a city, Dwaraka. So then he built Dwaraka, and I'll read a little bit about Dwaraka. So this is from the 10th canto. So in the construction of that city could be seen the full scientific knowledge and architectural skill of Vishvakarma. There were wide avenues, commercial roads, and courtyards laid out on ample plots of land. There were splendid parks and also gardens stocked with trees and creepers from the heavenly planets. The gateway towers were topped with golden turrets touching the sky, and their upper levels were fashioned of crystal quartz. The gold-covered houses were adorned in front with golden pots and on top with jeweled roofs, and their floors were inlaid with precious emeralds. Beside the houses stood treasury buildings, warehouses, and stables for fine horses, all built of silver and brass. Each residence had a watchtower and also a temple for its household deity. Filled with citizens of all four social orders, the city was especially beautified by the palaces of Sri Krishna, the Lord of the Yadus. Lord Indra brought Sri Krishna to Sudama Assembly Hall, standing within which a mortal man is not subject to the laws of mortality. Indra also gave the Parijata tree. Lord Varuna offered horses as swift as the mind, some of which were pure dark blue, others white. The treasurer of the demigods, Kuvera, gave his ace mystic treasures, and the rulers of various planets each presented their own opulences. So it's funny, because I remember one time, it was a long time ago, back in the early 80s or something, one young Gurukul girl, she garlanded the queen. And the queen, you know, she accepted the garland. It was a big thing for the devotees. Oh, here's the queen, she's accepted the garland. But meanwhile, you know, the British have stolen the crown jewels and ransacked India. And here we are offering homage to the queen, whose wealth had come from India. It's kind of, what's the word? It's contradictory. Anyway, so in Dwarka, Narada Muni went to visit Krishna. And Krishna was performing many different activities. So this is a test to see how many of the different activities that Narada went to these different palaces, what activities was Krishna performing? There's quite a lot of them. So does anyone have any thoughts? Huh?
Getting his daughter married?
Yeah, that's one. Well, yeah, you did well with that. Yeah.
That's the one I remember.
That's the one you remember. That was your main focus. Okay, what else? Is that the only one? Come on, everybody. You must remember some more.
Playing chess.
He wasn't playing chess, not according to the. He was playing dice. Dice. He was a gambler. The gambling man. And nobody got any other ideas? There's about 30 of them.
Ritualistic ceremonies.
Huh?
Ritualistic ceremonies.
What's that? Yeah, ritualistic ceremonies. That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Huh?
Doing the dishes.
What's that?
Doing the dishes.
Cleaning the dishes?
He didn't do that.
No, he doesn't do that.
He could.
Okay, you didn't do... He's playing with his kids. Yeah, he's playing with his kids. All right, here we go. He was playing dice with Uddhava. He was petting small children, offering oblations in the fire, feeding Brahmins, worshipping through the five Mahayagyas, eating remnants of food of Brahmins, doing rituals for worshipping at sunset, remaining silent, chanting Gayatri, riding on horses, elephants, and chariots, resting in his bed while bards sang his glories, consulting with royal ministers, enjoying in the water with young girls, giving well-decorated cows to Brahmins, listening to auspicious narrations of the Puranas, enjoying joking words with a wife, engaged in religious ritualistic ceremonies, engaged in matters of economic development, enjoying family life, meditating on himself, rendering menial service to elders, planning battles, making peace. Somewhere Lord Keshava and Balaram were pondering the welfare of the pious, getting his sons and daughters married to respectable brides, worshipping all the demigods with elaborate sacrifices, doing welfare work, building wells, parks, and monasteries, hunting expeditions on his Sindhi horse. Where's a Sindhi horse from? Where's that? Which part of India? North India. Yeah, North India. Sindhi horse. Yeah. I remember there's a famous horse. I went to this one palace in Rajasthan. And this horse is glorified. I can't remember his name, Chetak or Kichak. Anyway, in the palace there in Udaipur, they have, it's a beautiful palace. It's the city palace of Udaipur. Beautiful place. And the king was, he was very brave. But his horse is a very famous horse. I think his name was Chetak. also, he was killing animals for sacrifice, moving out. This is surprising, which I hadn't really looked at properly before. Moving about in disguise among the homes of ministers and citizens to know what they were thinking. He's a spy. Okay. So Narada said, after seeing all this, he said, because this was all going on in these different palaces, and this is this verse here, the purple Prabhupada talks about the unlimited potencies of the Lord. So after this, Narada says, now we understand your mystic potency. I will wander about the world singing your glories. But Narada said, he said, I feel very sorry because you have washed my horrible feet with your lotus hands. So Krishna, he reciprocated very beautifully that it was my duty to show the example of worshipping the saintly. So anyway, as far as Krishna's unlimited glories, we have the chapter where Brahma, he is embarrassed that he's tried to fool Krishna. So he says, in time, learned philosophers may be able to count all the atoms in the universe. They may be able to count all the snowflakes that fall down, but they will never, or all the shiny molecules in the stars and the sun and the sky, but they will never be able to enumerate your unlimited qualities. So Brahma prayed, Advaita Machuta Manada Mananta Rupa Madhyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha Vedeshu Durlabham Atma Bhakto Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Majami, that Krishna's unlimited Vaitum Achutam Anadam Anantarupam. So nobody can understand Krishna, but only one who gets Krishna's mercy. So there's that other beautiful verse, Atapi Te Deva Padam Bhujaya Prasada Le Shanagra Heta Evahi Jinati Tatvam Bhagavaham Mahim No Nachanyeka Chiram. Has it? Yeah, so just by a trace of Krishna's mercy, one can understand his glories. So how do we get Krishna's mercy? Well, there's a nice dialogue between Sanatana Goswami and Lord Chaitanya. And the qualification is that one has to be very humble. So this was Sanatana Goswami's mood, that when he met Lord Chaitanya, he felt so embarrassed about his position. And the Lord was cleansing his body. Lord Chaitanya is also so humble. He was cleaning his body, and Sanatana Goswami felt very awkward by this. And he said, I'm such a low-class person. People consider me learned and wise, but I'm just a fool. And I don't even know who I am, Kayami. So this is the proper mentality for getting this knowledge about Krishna, for understanding Krishna's greatness, because we're all so insignificant. Even Brahma, who's the most intelligent person in the universe, but he's just the four-headed Brahma. And there's Brahmas with thousands and millions of heads. So what to speak of ordinary living entities? So to understand Krishna's glories, which were totally unlimited, we have to have this mood of humility. And that's the only way. So then the next verse, which I'm supposed to speak on, is got quite a long purport, but it's quite interesting. So we'll just do the Sanskrit together. Patnya patem prosha grihanu pagatam velokya sanjata mano mahotsava Vrtashtur-arat-sahasya-sanasayat sakam-brater-vidita-lochananaha. Okay, the queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoice within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations. As was socially customary, they covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. So the purport. As mentioned above, the Lord entered his home palace as occupied by 16,108 queens. This means that the Lord at once expanded himself in as many plenary expansions as there were queens and palaces, and entered each and every one of them simultaneously and separately. Here is another manifestation of the feature of his internal potency. He can expand himself in as many forms of spiritual identity as he desires, even though he is one without a second. It is confirmed by the Shruti mantra that the Absolute is one alone, and yet he becomes many as soon as he so desires. These manifold expansions of the Supreme Lord are manifested as plenary and separated portions. The separated portions are representations of his energy, and the plenary portions are manifestations of his personality. Thus the personality of God had manifested himself in 16,108 plenary expansions, and simultaneously entered into each and every one of the palaces of the queens. This is called Vaibhav, or the transcendental potency of the Lord. And because he can do so, he is also known as Yogeshwar. Ordinarily, a yogi or mystic living being is able to expand himself at utmost to tenfold expansions of his body. But the Lord can do so to the extent of as many thousands as infinitely as he likes. Unbelievers become astonished to learn that Lord Krishna married more than 16,000 queens, because they think of Lord Krishna as one of them, and measure the potency of the Lord by their own limited potency. One should know, therefore, that the Lord is never on the level of the living beings, who are but expansions of his marginal potency. And one should never equalize the potent and the potency, although there is very little difference of quality between the potent and the potency. The queens were also expansions of his internal potency, and thus the potent and potencies are perpetually exchanging transcendental pleasures, known as pastimes of the Lord. One should not, therefore, become astonished to learn that the Lord married so many wives. On the contrary, one should affirm that even if the Lord married 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. He married only 16,000 wives and entered in each and every one of the different palaces just to impress in the history of the human beings on the surface of the earth that the Lord is never equal to or less than any human being, however powerful he may be. No one, therefore, is either equal to or greater than the Lord. The Lord is always great in all respects. God is great is eternal truth. So Prabhupada mentions about one Muslim ruler who actually had 300 wives. And so he can only spend one night a year with each of his wives. But Krishna had 16,000, and he could be with them every night. Of course, in the Rasa dance, I've heard that he had billions of gopas dancing with him, 3 billion gopas or something, maybe more. So Krishna, he's inconceivable. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that the first thing you have to understand about Krishna is his achinta shakti, his inconceivable potency. So, we have to follow in the footsteps of Socrates. Socrates, he was considered to be the most intelligent person in the Greek Empire. There's something called the Oracle of Delphi. And so they were like wise, intelligent beings that they would ask different questions. So they asked the Oracle, who is the most intelligent person in the Greek Empire? So the Oracle replied that it's actually Socrates. So they went to see Socrates and they said, you have been found to be the most intelligent person in the empire. So Socrates, he said, no, I'm just a fool, I don't know anything. So he was actually somewhat intelligent. So, but he still studied in university. He's a great philosopher. Even after, you know, however many thousand, 2,500 years, whatever it is, 3,000 years, people are still studying Socrates. So he did say something intelligent. Also, he said when he had to take the hemlock, they forced him to poison himself. He said, "You can kill my body, but you can't kill me." So, anyway, the rest of the purport is as follows. Therefore, as soon as the queen saw from a distance their husband, who was away from home for long periods due to the Battle of Kurukshetra, they all arose from the slumber of meditation and prepared to receive their most beloved. According to Yajnavalkya's religious injunctions, a woman whose husband is away from home should not take part in any social functions, should not decorate her body, should not laugh, and should not go to any relative's house in any circumstance. This is the vow of the ladies whose husbands are away from home. At the same time, it is also enjoined that a wife should never present herself before the husband in an unclean state. She must decorate herself with ornaments and good dress and should always be present before the husband in a happy and joyous mood. The queens of Lord Krishna were all in meditation, thinking of the Lord's absence, and were always meditating upon him. Of course, having a husband like Krishna, it was probably a lot easier than having a husband like me. So, you know, I don't know, I guess Yajnavalkya wasn't just talking about Krishna, but I guess the man must have been much more desirable and ideal people, except for the present company excepted, of course. The Lord's devotees cannot live for a moment without meditating on the Lord. And what to speak of the queens, who were all goddesses of fortune, and they weren't ordinary ordinary women. It's just such goddesses of fortune. I mean, incarnated as queens in the pastimes of the Lord at Dwarka, they can never be separated from the Lord, either by presence or by trance. The gopas at Vrindavan could not forget the Lord when the Lord was away in the forest cowherding. When the Lord boy, Krishna, was absent from the village, the gopas at home used to worry about him traversing the rough ground with his soft lotus feet. By thinking thus, they were sometimes overwhelmed in trance and mortified in the heart. Such is the condition of the pure associates of the Lord. They are always in trance, and so the queens were also in trance during the absence of the Lord. Presently, having seen the Lord from a distance, they at once gave up all their engagements, including the vows of women as described above. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there was a regular psychological reaction on the occasion. First of all, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see their husband, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks on the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. So this is, you know, the way women, according to Yajnavalkya, are supposed to behave when the husband is away. In a way, it emphasizes that the marriage is such a very crucial and necessary part of Vedic culture, that having stable marriages and families is the building block of human society, and therefore, you know, it's emphasized how women would behave when the husbands were away. And it, you know, it takes a lot of humility to behave like that. And then the shyness that is mentioned, because Prabhupada says the woman's beauty is in her shyness. So it's hard to collate this kind of mentality with the modern age we're living in. Shyness is not really a predominant quality of most Western women at all. But it is something that Prabhupada talks about a lot. And that shyness and, you know, not, because in the Vedic culture, or even remnants of the Vedic culture, even when Srila Prabhupada talked about his mother, he said that his mother never went out in public. Because he said that she always had a palanquin. She was carried in a palanquin. Because, as far as I can understand, the women, they did not want to be the object of attention of a common man. They wanted to maintain their dignity, understanding the real nature of the body, and they didn't want common men looking at their body and lusting after them. So therefore we see that high-class women, they didn't mingle with low-class men. They weren't even to be seen. So, you know, like Prabhupada said, introducing Vedic culture into Western society, America, it's very difficult. But, I mean, ultimately, this is the ideal society that makes people happy. That when women have a good husband and men have a good wife, then we can actually have a stable society. So Prabhupada, he wrote all these purports. He didn't write them just for fun. These purports are there to give instructions of how to mold society and how to behave. Of course, to expect your wife to behave like this, you have to be really exemplary as a man, as a husband. I know I'm not, but, you know, that's the message you get, that to expect your wife to abandon all social kind of happiness except with your family, you can't even laugh in public. It's pretty severe. But that's Yajnavalkya. I mean, it's not really relevant so much in this day and age, but Prabhupada does mention it, so there must be some relevance. So how to put all these different aspects of Vedic culture into modern society is quite a challenge. But gradually, if we understand the proper behavior, then it's possible to come to this level. But if we don't understand the proper behavior, we will never come to the right platform. So therefore, it's important to understand Prabhupada and the different teachings of the acharyas so that we can gradually introduce these symptoms or characteristics of the ideal society. So, anyway, Krishna, he had all these beautiful girls. For them, it wasn't a challenge to behave like this because they had no other attraction for any other men. So they were always absorbed in thoughts of him. And Krishna, you know, he has so many women that love him so much. It's easy to understand. I was thinking about someone like, of course, Elvis Presley, he's a bit out of date. Justin Bieber, what's his name? Justin Bieber? Somebody, you know, I don't know, I've never heard his music. But anyway, so these people have huge fan clubs. I know whenever Elvis Presley, you know, he was the king, back a long time ago. Don't step on my blue suede shoes. But he had fan clubs all over the world. And on his birthday, all these fans would cook him a birthday cake, even though he wasn't with them. There was one Elvis, his body was full of yuck, but, you know, they loved him. They worshipped him. And so every birthday they cooked him a cake, even though he wasn't with them. So we can understand to some degree how all these wives, even though they weren't with Krishna, they were wrapped in thoughts of him, even though there were so many of them. So if Elvis Presley could have a million fans, I remember when the Beatles, probably none of you remember, maybe a couple of you, the Beatles, you know, there was Beatlemania. Beatlemania, when the Beatles would arrive at a big airport, like, you know, New York, whatever, thousands of these screaming girls would come along, and if one of the Beatles looked at them, they would faint in ecstasy, literally. So we can understand how Krishna, being the acme of beauty and charm, could be so attractive to these women, not just to the women either. But Krishna has a personal relationship with all of them. And so, but Krishna feels inadequate because all these great devotees who would just do anything for Krishna, there are so many of them and there's only one Krishna. So he says, I cannot possibly repay you. Napareham nirvajasam yujam. For your spotless behavior, you've given up everything for me. You've abandoned your households. You just have to be satisfied with your own behavior. So Krishna cannot repay us. He says that, but actually he can't, because Krishna reciprocates with everybody. And so we have to try to become devoted to Krishna more and more, and Krishna will reciprocate more and more. And the whole idea is that we have to love Krishna and nothing else, nobody else. And then Krishna will fully reciprocate, but it takes time. Krishna makes you wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. He wants to make sure you're sincere. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Any reflections, comments, questions, corrections? Yeah. Madam T, probably.
Thank you, Adikata Prabhu, for such a nice class. Thank you. I was just remembering reading in Krishna book. You're talking about Yajnavalkya, his theory.
About what?
About Yajnavalkya, about his theory about, is that who it was that who said that the women should not do this and that while the husband
Yeah, Yajnavalkya.
Yeah.
Was that in the Krishna book too?
No, that was not in the Krishna book. But what I remember from Krishna book, Mother Rohini, who was there in Vrindavan while her husband Vasudev was in Mathura, it specifically described there the same aspect that although the women would, away from their husband, would not dress up and everything, but Rohini, Mother, she, it was Krishna's birthday, and describes that how she dressed up and, for the occasion. So one thing that we can see that when it comes to Krishna consciousness, even in Krishna book we see that right. Mother Rohini did that.
Yeah.
And she celebrated Krishna's birthday. So even if we were to go in that direction, and like you said, Srila Prabhupada's not writing just for fun, he's writing that for some specific reason.
Yeah, right.
And it might be hard to have it here in the modern world in 2021, but yet we do understand that what we can see is that when we have Krishna in the center of our lives, then all those ceremonies we celebrate with joy and everything and dressing up.
Yeah. Was she allowed to laugh?
I think what I hear there that the I don't know if it was specifically, I don't remember if it was for the birthday celebration, but it described that everybody was so joyous, which I'm assuming it's for the birthday celebration, that the women were so happy that they were throwing yogurt at each other and they were having fun. And then the men, seeing them, they felt inspired and they started doing that. And then the men and the women started doing it at each other, if I remember correctly.
Which chapter is this?
I can't remember any of these things. But
celebrating Krishna's birthday?
I'm assuming. I don't remember that aspect, but I remember that particular part where about Rohini dressing up, and specifically Prabhupada mentions about that normally they don't, but they did.
Anyone remember where it was?
Prabhupada is not here, but I'm assuming it's there, but I will check it when I go back. I know I'm not making it up. I do remember that. And I will send it to you after I do my... Chapter 4 or 5, he's saying. So it must be a birth of Lord Krishna, I'm assuming.
Which chapter?
Chapter 4 or 5. But yeah, it specifically described that how they were doing that, and then the men were doing it, and then they were doing it at each other, because there was such a joyous occasion. Again, Krishna being in the center of their lives.
Yeah, it's a good point. For Krishna, the women could dress up.
Yeah, and laugh, probably.
Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna. Anything else? All right, thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.